Monday afternoon, late lunch, LMFM Radio. Welcome to the show. Coming up today, from the depths of depression to top of the world, Shane Craddock's inspiring story. The importance of having a working smoke alarm as a local family flee their burning home. And Tony Whelan's here to talk about the second book in his Trilosophy series, Amy's Amazon.
The Late Lunch, weekdays from 1:30 on your station, LMFM.
Congratulations and celebrations. When I tell everyone that you're in love with me. Congratulations and jubilations. I want the world to know I'm happy as can be.
I'm supposed to be in control of the show.
Yes, well, you see, today you're just not, because I decided just to take control at the start of the show, because we all want to say a massive congratulations to the new Mrs. Deirdre Sheridan and her husband, Mark. Yes, folks, she's back and she has the ring on the finger.
Yes, I do.
Congratulations to both of you. We're delighted.
Thanks very much, yeah. God, I wasn't expecting this now. I was lining up the next call.
You were, and the next call is lined up, but we couldn't let this pass because you pulled a fast one on us all. Well, I have to admit, I did know myself, but well done to both of you. And you were the one that were slagging me how many years ago. Don't be mentioning that farmer on the late lunch. Don't be talking about tractors. Don't be talking about this. Well, here we are. Mrs. Sheridan, I'm a new producer on the show.
Yes, you do.
You had a great time.
We nipped off and we got, yeah, we did with our family. So we got married in Rome. Yeah.
Wonderful.
That was it. Did it under the cover of darkness.
Yeah, and you're back to the grindstone, as they say today. Well, look, we want to wish yourself and Mark all our happiness for the rest of your lives. It's great, great news. And it all began at a farmer's market, didn't it?
That's something along those lines.
Yes, when you plant eyes on him, there you go.
He saw the wellies and he,
yeah, great stuff. Ah, it's a wonderful, wonderful story. And we're delighted for you. And I just want to say today from everyone, I'm sure everybody out there joins in me in wishing you both all the very best for a great life together. So
thanks,
she's
Sherry.
Back with us on Late Lunch today, and we're delighted to have her back. Coming up on the show a little bit later on, we're going to be joined by Mick Cook, the Drogheda United manager, to reflect on Drogheda's fantastic draw with Malmo in the Europa League. That's after 3 o'clock today. Tony Whelan's popping in. We met Tony a few years ago when he published his first ever book, Laura's Legacy. He is the second in the series on the shelves now. And a remarkable story from Shane Craddock, who was in the depths of depression but is soaring high now. But first today on the late lunch, I'm joined on the line by Tracy Hanby. Afternoon, Tracy.
Hello, Jerry. How are you?
You're saying, how am I? I'm fine. But Tracy, how are all of you? Will you tell our listeners what happened yesterday?
Yesterday, unfortunately, my parents' house burnt down. And unfortunately... Well, glad for them, but unfortunately I was witness to it. I stayed over, which is unusual for me because I'm usually working at the weekends, and this night happened to go home to my parents' house because I knew my mom was up. She texted me about something and I thought, sure, I may as well go and stay with her and we can have a bit of fun, and which we did. And then we went to bed, and 10 o'clock that next morning, I was woken up to the fire alarm, and that's not unusual in our house. When my dad is cooking the breakfast, he might put on toast, and if the door is left open, the fire alarm goes off. But obviously, sixth sense comes into things, and got up and opened the bedroom door to find the hot press on fire and smoke bellowing out from the top. And I went, as I call it, psycho emergency. Ward 10. I'm actually a nurse and a midwife, and obviously the bit of emergency training kicks in, and I went ballistic and fire, screaming, get out. And we have animals, and I threw them all out, and ended up, I even had in my head to switch off the fuse board because I knew, because it was coming from the hot press, it was obviously possibly an electrical fault, if you know, or cause.
Yeah.
And I thought, at least if I got the fuse board undone, that there's no electricity to the source, it might minimise its progression. So undid the fuse box, got everyone out, I'm flashing back as I'm talking about it. We're all a bit shocked. It could have been a hell of a lot worse. We could have not left. If that fire alarm didn't alert us, where the hot press was, it was the middle of the bungalow. And if the fire had extended out of the hot press, blocking our access out of the house, things may have been very, very different. And I've two older parents, and one with a lot of health concerns, and would not have been the most mobile, so it would have been quite a different story. So thankfully we left the house and watched it go up in flames.
So everybody, Tracy, so there was yourself and your parents in the house, was that
myself
it?
Myself and my parents,
and
yeah.
Wouldn't you, when you reflect on this day, and I do know you're still traumatised by it, even when you talk about it there and think what might have been, but thank God it's turned out well.
Yeah,
wasn't it just nearly fate that you went there? You wouldn't normally go to the house.
I'm absolutely, that's the part that's probably troubling me the most. Not that it's troubling me, it's great, but it's like, how did that happen? Because I definitely don't even ring them really at the weekends, because I'm working. I work during the night in venues and stuff like that, because you know me anyway from Gigs Ireland and promotional stuff and that. And I was at the Spiegel tent until, 12? And it's pure coincidence. My mum was awake. She texted me at that time, and I said, well, sure, I'm not going to go home and spend the night in my own house on my own when I actually could go and spend it with my mum and have
my
catch up time.
Isn't that just unbelievable the way certain things are meant to be? But I know you're on with me today, because this is the real example of having working alarms in your home.
Oh my God, I don't know if any of your listeners are on my page, but I put one photograph up of the house and basically said, please, 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 all I want you to do is check your house alarms and make sure your batteries are working and replaceable. And even in reflection, things like the hot press doesn't need as much. Like, I'm sure if everyone goes and looks into their hot press, do they need as much as the clothes that are in there? Like, yes, it's a hot press, it's there to keep them fresh and dry and warm them, you know, coming out of the washing machine, blah, blah, blah. But do we need the quantity? I would say a huge amount of hot presses are overfull. Even things like, what stuff is in your attic? Do you need that stuff in your attic? If you don't, if it's not even being used, well, why have it there?
Yeah, it's something else that
sales.
Yeah.
You know, the fire safety awareness now, and obviously I'm on a bit of a mission now because of my God, my eyes are open more. But it's really got me thinking about so much more. I'm very lucky in the community. I've a lot of really good people that obviously through work and social wise I'm very well supported. So I have to say a big thank you to everyone. That's really been amazing. Our extended family have been absolutely outstanding. There's certain businesses in Navan who've been amazing, the estate agent Gavigan's and DNG, they've been so good. I mean, the community, this is when you really see who's your neighbours and your community, and I have to say everyone's been absolutely amazing.
Can you just tell me about your mum and dad, because they had to stand there as their life went up in flames in front of them?
Yeah, I'm going to get upset. That's the hardest part, because they saw their whole life.
Yes, I know, Tracy. Go on, take your time there. I know it is a very, very difficult moment for you as they stood there.
My mum and dad have worked so hard in their life, and they've got us to where we are in our life. We would be nothing without them. And to see your parents stand there and watch their life, their retirement, their house, their memories. They've brought all the memories from all the different places they've lived, and it's all in the house. And that's probably another thing you have to think about when you're storing all your lovely memories and your belongings and things like that. Yeah, I really have to think about what's needed and what's not. But a lot of sentimental stuff were damaged, and it was devastating to stand there and see my parents just, I don't know, just their life being taken away from them in front of them. They're alive, but they're left now to pick up the pieces. The insurance, all that, that's another thing as well. We're learning so much. You are entitled to an independent assessor, and your insurance are supposed to notify you of that. Now, I'm so well supported, that all that info was handed to me.
Yeah.
We're so lucky to have such good people around us. But these are the things your listeners need to know, that their policy, they need to know what they're actually insuring for. They need to know that they're insuring the correct amount of contents, because even your carpets, your curtains, your curtain pole, they're all contents. Mm. And if the value doesn't match, you're going to have difficulty.
You're
going
to be in trouble at that stage. But look, you know, Tracy, I know you're mighty upset about this, and we feel for you today. I'm sure everybody listening does as well. But you know what? You have your mum and dad, because
I do. I have my family,
yes,
and we're all alive.
Yes.
And it could have been a hell of a lot worse. And we did so well to do everything. The fire service were great when they got there. Unfortunately, there was a mix-up with getting there. It took them an overextended time to make the destination. We've no idea why. That'll come out, I'm sure, at some point. But it took four units to control the fire, and it was quite a day yesterday. We will never forget the 23rd of June as long as we live. And unfortunately, it was on both my cousins' birthdays.
My. You're never going to forget it for several reasons. But as I said, that life is irreplaceable, but everything else in
and
life.
We want to make, like, that's the reason why I came on air with you, because I'm absolutely adamant I'm going to be obsessively telling everyone about fire alarms. They don't cost a lot. They cost about 5-6 euros, and I'd have as many in the house as you require. Don't be over.
No.
But don't be under. You know, at the end of
Absolutely.
The day, and even things like making sure you have a safe exit, and what happens if a fire happens in the hot press. It's the hot press.
Yeah, and where it happened. What's your mum and dad's name?
My mum and dad are Anne and David.
We send them our good wishes, and all our thoughts are with Anne and David this afternoon.
They're getting very well looked after here, so,
yeah.
You know, it couldn't be better at the moment, other than they just have to work out their future for the
yes,
next year.
And that will happen, you needn't worry, and
it
plenty
will.
Of good people around you as well. Tracy, I appreciate you joining us. It's a real lesson, as you say, in protecting our homes and paying attention to it. But look, you're alive to tell the tale, and you're all well, and that is the main thing. I wish you
Absolutely.
Well, Tracy.
Thanks a million, Jerry.
Thank you very
Thanks
much
everyone.
Indeed.
Bye-bye.
Take care of yourself. Bye-bye. That's Tracy Hanby there. Sunday morning, leisurely lie-in, and boom, just like that it happens. Smoke alarms. Go check them now. Check them now, folks. Don't say I'll do it tonight. Go and check them. It is very, very important. Up next on Late Lunch, Shane Craddock.
The Late Lunch, weekdays from 1:30 on your station, LMFM.
Back in 1995, his world came crashing round him when he was consumed by depression. He even contemplated ending his life, but thanks to the support of his family, friends and the professionals, he's risen from the depths to soar once more. And he's my special guest on Late Lunch today, and I'm delighted to welcome Shane Craddock to the show. Welcome, Shane.
Thanks, Jerry. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you very much for joining me.
No problem.
You're a biochemical engineer, is it, by profession?
Well, I'm not anymore, really, but I qualified in that, yeah.
What is that, biochem? What are you talking about, work-wise?
Well, in simple terms, is you learn how to make bombs, beer and drugs.
Okay,
so
that's quite a mix, isn't it?
Yeah, no, not the bombs, obviously. beer and drugs, it's essentially you learn how to kind of basically make chemicals. So, like, for example, you know, you could make whether it's sugar or whether it's, you know, soft drinks or whether it's pharmaceuticals in particular. So
yeah.
A lot of biochemical engineers would go into the pharmaceutical sector or the brewing industry.
And you were flying along. You worked, I know, with Bord Pneumona for a time.
Yeah.
And I mentioned 1995 because it really is a watershed in
yeah.
your life. You were with Pepsi, was it, at that stage?
I was with PepsiCo International down in Cork. And it seems like, it is a long time ago, but it seems even further when you say it, like the way you just gave the intro, because it's hard to even recall really what it was like, because it wasn't, as you can imagine, wasn't great fun.
Mm.
So yeah, so I was in Pepsi when that whole kind of event happened. It was building for a while, and yeah, kind of came up to a very significant point, and I was very lucky. I got a second chance.
What do you mean it was building for a while? Because as I said, you were a high flyer. Life was good. You had a good job. Things were going your way. And often people are curious when people seem on the outside to be doing really well,
yeah.
and then you hear about somebody who's not well within. What do you mean it was building up?
Well, first of all, I wasn't a high flyer. I was a good boy in terms of I had done well at school.
Yes.
I had got a good degree and I got a good job with a big company, which were all the goals that I wanted.
But a lot of people would say that is
high
flying.
Well, maybe so, yeah. But was it building for a while? Yeah, looking back, it was. And I think the roots of it, looking back on it now, were actually very simple. They were in low self-esteem. You know, that's what the root of it was. There were different symptoms and circumstances around me, which I suppose brought it out. But as I've gone on to discover, low self-esteem is at an epidemic level everywhere. Because even now when I deal with senior executives or entrepreneurs, it generally will manifest at some point. So I suppose looking back, it was building in the context of, yeah, you know, somebody who was probably shy. I was smart intellectually. I had done well, as I say, through the system. But I ended up one day where, like, genuinely the plan was that I wasn't going to be here at the end of the day. I was, you know, I had a very clear plan as to what I was going to do and when I was going to do it. And luckily for me, I had an intervention. There was somebody very close to me who was in the right place at the wrong time. And because of that, that changed everything. That was my dad. He answered the phone. I was ringing home unknown to him to say goodbye to my mother. And he answered the phone. He wasn't supposed to be there, but he immediately picked up there was something wrong. And he immediately got me to, I was in a payphone box down in Cork outside of work ringing. And he picked up, there was something wrong. He couldn't get it out of me, but except I was crying. And eventually just said, listen, I'm going to ring you back in 5 minutes' time. Will you stay where you are? And I said, yeah, I will stay where I am. And he rang me back 5 minutes' time and he gave me the number of a counsellor. And believe it or not, Jerry, to my shame, I actually got very annoyed with him because my ego couldn't accept that I, you know, needed to have help like that.
Even though you had contemplated ending your life in this world as we know.
Yeah, well, you know, as anybody who knows who gets into that situation, which some of your listeners possibly have, there's nothing logical about it. There's nothing logical about it. You think things that are just don't make any sense when you look back, if you're lucky enough to look back. And so he put me in contact with the counsellor who I rang straight away from the phone box because my dad told me to. And he got straight to the nub of what I was going to do, how I was going to do it. He dragged it out of me and he got me to get into a car and drive the journey from Cork to Waterford. And that was the start of the recovery period.
So from your lowest point, the climb back actually began from that point.
Yeah, that was a turning point.
Do you mind me asking you, what way were you going to end your life?
I'd rather not get into the details of it, if you don't mind, because it is a very personal thing. But suffice to say, it was going to involve some chemicals. My chemical engineering was coming in handy from that point of view. and, you know, it was chemicals. It was going to be later that evening and blah, blah, blah. You know, it's not really relevant.
Of course. You know, because... Course. I was just curious. Thanks for letting me into your world to that extent even. So from that point, you moved on. You met this counsellor, your family. It was out in the open. No more were you trying to deal with this on a one-to-one basis, you and your problem.
Yeah.
How long did it take you to work your way through to get back into reasonable shape mentally?
Well, I asked the counsellor that the first day I met him and his answer wasn't palatable because he said to me, look, it's going to take you a year to get back to your baseline. And I didn't want to hear that because I thought he was going to solve it that day. So I got back to baseline within 6 months, though, because I just said, look, you know, once I decided I was going to stay, then I said I'd just do whatever it took to kind of make the best of my life, to be honest with you. So,
were you able to work? Did you continue working at this stage?
No, this is the funny thing. Like, nobody in work would have known. Even now, you know, you wouldn't know somebody from 16 years ago. They might be listening to this now. They'll think, what? You know, I was there. No, literally, that's the scary thing about being in that kind of position where you can be around people on a day-to-day basis and they wouldn't have the slightest notion there's anything wrong because I was very good at masking it, you know, putting on a happy face. My goal at the worst of it when I was in work was an hourly goal. I'd say, I'll just get through this hour, look at the clock from, let's say, 2 to 3, get to the 3 o'clock, get up, go to the toilet, get into the toilet, close the cubicle, bang my head against the wall and just say, right, get through another hour and then go out and put a face on it. So, but then, you know, going home, it would just be like dark clouds, you know. Work almost in a way was a distraction. It was sometimes a good distraction. And then when you're on your own, obviously, if your head's where my head was, it's not fun to be around it or not fun to be on your own. So but as I say, like, you know, I'm very lucky because when I came out of that, I learned a lot of lessons with my counsellor. You know, he ejected me after 6 months. He said, look, you've turned it around quicker than most people I've known. He said, you don't need me anymore. And I didn't want to hear that either because he was right. He said, look, otherwise I'm going to become a crutch. So I just said, right, okay, well, what do I need to do? And he said, I'm not going to tell you. You need to figure it out yourself. You know, he said, but you know enough, I can't tell you what to do now, it would be wrong. So that's what I've done since. So I became obsessed with probably personal development seminars, books, training courses. Some of them were great, some of them weren't. And I just learned as I went. But once I made the decision to stay, then I wanted to make the most of it. And then you know, I suppose looking back, this is the funny thing, you see, is that even though it was the hardest thing that ever happened to me, it was probably one of the best things that ever happened to me, which is weird. And I suppose anybody who goes through something difficult, and what I found in the process, even sharing my story like this, it kind of gives, encouragement to people if they're going through a similar thing, but B, also gives permission to tell your story, because the reality is that I was really embarrassed to tell my story up until about 3 years ago. And somebody encouraged me to do it, and I thought about it a long time, and I said, okay, I'm going to do it. But I wanted to be clear on what the reason was. It's not for sympathy. It was really more for what I said previously around, you know, once you share your story, it kind of gives permission to people to say, do you know what? There's a guy, as you say, you thought he had it all. My career was mapped out in front of me, you know, but in reality, I had nothing. I had nothing. So to me, that's what it's about. And I suppose I encourage people to tell their story. I find story anyway is great in terms of being honest. And what I find even working with clients now, if I tell them that story that I just told you, what they'll always turn around is 9 times out of 10, they'll turn around to me and they'll go, fair play to you. And then they'll go, you know, something happened to me, blah, 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 X years ago. And then they share it. And they'll often say to me, you're the first person I've ever told that to. And I'd say to them, you should tell that story to as many people as you can, because everybody's walking around thinking everybody else is great, which they are great. But if they realise the pain that you had to go through, they would look at you and go, oh, wow, well, that gives me hope. It gives me confidence. And funnily enough, you know, my career changed because of that whole time. Completely changed. I'm not an engineer now. That's what I was saying to, really at the start. I work as a business and performance advisor. But all of that came about because of what I learned going through that terrible time, because the majority of what I learned on the performance advisor side is mostly mental, you know. So now I get paid really for going through that SH1T that I went through when I was 24 and from there. And I was thinking about this actually after Friday when I was speaking to your researcher, and she was asking me a question, and afterwards I was thinking it would be wrong even to say now that you don't have the odd down day, because I do. But it's not as bad as what it was then, because I've learned different mental skills and resilience skills that I suppose are invaluable to me. But it's important to say, like, everybody has down days. Everybody. It's just a question of, I think the more people kind of just accept, you know, there's nothing wrong with it. If it continues to kind of go on, you should definitely get help. But it's very common. It's very normal. And there's lots of help out there.
The processes and procedures you went through when you, in terms of your recovery with the counsellor, and what you did yourself, because I did read a lot of this came back to you as well, and of course when yeah. when the person, the professional you were dealing with said after 6 months, away you go,
yeah.
and you said you had to carry that on. I'm curious to touch on those, what they were, you know, what were the things you learned, or the main sort of pointers you could give somebody maybe who might be listening today who finds themselves in a situation like you did.
Right, okay. Well, see, I'd be reasonably clear on this now, because I teach this kind of stuff to my clients one-to-one and in workshops and that kind of stuff. To keep it very simple, the first thing I'd say is, if you're a man, an Irish man, talk it out with somebody, because women are great at doing that. One of the best courses I did actually after the whole thing was, and you're going to laugh at this one, Jerry, I did an assertiveness for women course. Right, where there was no other... Yeah, there was no other men in the class. It's a long story, but I blagged my way into the class because there was no assertiveness for men class, because men were assumed to be assertive. Now, there is now, but in 1995, 96, there was no assertiveness for men, so I actually blagged my way in. And one of the things I learned in that workshop, it was over 6-7 weeks, it was brilliant. And I got the absolute kicked out of me by the women, because they used me in the role plays for men. And a lot of the women there would have had issues with men, as you might imagine. But what I found was that women talk, share problems in a different way. They talk it out and there's no real judgment. Whereas men in Ireland, any in particular, would be, certainly I was like that, you know, they won't talk it out. They won't, because they might feel it's a sign of weakness, which I certainly did. So that was one of the things, is if there's a problem,
talk it out talk with it people. Out. More pointers from Shane Craddock right after news headlines at 2 o'clock.
The Late Lunch, weekdays from 1:30 on your station, LMFM.
Shane Craddock has risen like a phoenix from the flames, and he's with us on Late Lunch this afternoon. First point you mentioned just before news, Shane, was saying to men, talk about it. Out your story. Don't be afraid to talk and let people know and confide in somebody, etc. What else?
Yeah, and sorry, that also applies to women. I'm not going very much does.
But they're better at talking, isn't
it? Yeah, but see, you know, it also applies. Okay, one of the things that I'll do with my clients is, and you know, if you're at home, maybe you could even like draw this out. If you can imagine a triangle in your mind, and at the top of the triangle, just picture the word mental. On the bottom left, picture the word physical, and on the bottom right, picture the word emotional. And so, you know, this is how I actually manage myself now. Basically, all those three combined to manage your state of mind. All right, your energy. So if your state of mind is good, you know, if you're feeling good in a good mood, well, Jerry's going to think good, better thoughts. If Jerry's tired or he's a bit upset about something, so if any one of those three, the mind or the emotional or even the physical, if you're fatigued, it's very difficult to think good things when you're fatigued. So as I look at it now, you need to have a strategy for those three areas, your mind, your physical health, and then your emotional health. So on the mind side, what I'd be saying is, first, we recognize that it's needed. So like we do prioritize physical fitness nowadays. It's very common, blah, blah, blah. Not as many people prioritize their mental fitness, although it's getting there because you see things like meditation and mindfulness are becoming much more popular, particularly in schools, which is great. But most people I know don't have an active strategy for their mind. So how do you do that? Go for the simple stuff. What the counselor actually said to me when I first went to him was, look, every day, go for a walk for at least half an hour. Now, everybody can go for a walk for half an hour. Don't go for a fast walk. Go for a slow walk. Slow down. Come out of your head. Engage with your senses. In terms of what you see, what you hear, you know, what you feel. Like actually listen to the birds and the trees. And even now at the moment with this, you know, the long nights, great way to do it. So every day, that's a simple thing you can do. Also on the physical side, I would, right now I prioritize my exercise. All my clients, if they work with me one-to-one, they have to have an exercise program. They have to. So I've tried all different things, but you do whatever you enjoy because the endorphins and everything else. But also muscle is important. Now, physically, if you look after your muscle, that looks after your mind. So I'm a big fan of weights in the gym. You don't have to do that, but some form of weight resistance training, be it Pilates or weight training, something that's going to actually challenge your muscle is very, very important. And then you can be fantastic on your mind and your physical health, but emotionally, if you're off, it's going to affect your energy and your state of mind. And that could be anything. So it's not that could be something like, you know, perhaps somebody dying or somebody who's sick, or something that affects you at a deep level, even if it's a broken relationship. And that's an area where it's simple stuff, but that's where I'd be encouraging people to go and actually talk to somebody. You know, because sometimes you don't even know why you're off. By talking that with somebody who's a professional, for example, they can just help you get perspective and be a mirror. And I suppose I'd top it off then by just personal development. I became a huge fan of reading and investing in myself. So like we all invest in cars and computers and holidays and all these different things, you know, which are great, but they may not, and they don't give the same return, I think, as good education. So investing in yourself to understand yourself, whether it's, you know, something on the mind or something on the body or any sort of educational program that's going to help you develop as a person, it, to me, is a fantastic thing to do. And I've spent a lot of money, Jerry, over the last 15 years on myself. And this is outside of, you know, when I was working in Pepsi, they were great because they gave me great training. But I've invested a lot of money in myself to go to people just to learn something new that I thought would help me, because, as I say, I became kind of slightly obsessive about just staying here and making the most of it. Hopefully that's helpful.
The triangle,
yeah,
and investing in yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
It stood you good because you really have. You've changed careers. You've risen up from a very low point in your life. You went on to form three successful companies before you got into this area of working with other people.
Yeah.
Do you believe that your experience and what you had to work through played a huge part in those business successes and what you're doing today?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah. There's no doubt about it. I think I would still be working. I'd be working in either Pepsi or there's some other large multinational now if that hadn't happened to me. Because what happened was when I hit that point, we hit a wall, and anybody who's listening who's ever got to that point, I started to ask questions that I'd never asked before, which were, for example, why am I doing this job? Like, why am I doing this? How did I get here? And like, what am I passionate about? What's my legacy? When I get to 90, 95 and I look back at my life, what do I want to be looking at? What do I want people to have said? You know.
But I'm just thinking, if everybody asks themselves that question, they'll say, I'm a square peg in a round hole or whatever. And is it possible for everybody, you know, to have that great big shuffle that everybody ultimately moves to something that fulfills them more?
Well, why not? Why not?
Yes.
You know, I mean, it's yeah. Unless you ask the question, you'll stay where you are. You know, so
let's have it on a practical sense. I have a job and I'm grateful for it, and I might be on the minimum wage or whatever, and there's been cutbacks and everything, but I need that money in the current climate that we find ourselves in. Yet I'd like to do something else. Is that where you talk about investing in your personal development to enable you ultimately to make that shift?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think you have to balance it, I think, between practicality of your situation and your aspirations. But I think, I suppose, in my experience, I think that a lot of people can just settle for where they're at, and then all optimism and hope is gone. And like, we all have to have goals. And that was one of the things, the first things that the counsellor got me to do, actually, which I still do, and albeit in a different way. He said to me, like, what do you want? And I said, what do you mean? Is, you know, like, what do you want out of life? Like, do you just want to work? And I said, well, I want to be happy. Okay, you want to be happy. I want to have a family, yeah. And I want to be healthy, and I want to have travel, and I want to, all these different things. But he got me to write them down and say, right, now we're going to pick out maybe two or three as a priority and say, let's start working on that. Now, I suppose what I've discovered since is that, in terms of investing in yourself, if that person, for example, is working in a job, but they have an aspiration to maybe set up an internet business or, I don't know, go off and build iron gates, and they have the skill set, grand, they can go off and start maybe working at night or doing something on a practical level. Or let's say if they don't know how to do it, go off and actually, invest in yourself, go to a course. You know, there's so many courses out nowadays. It's amazing. Or maybe the third thing you could do, which I think maybe is more powerful, is you find somebody maybe who has done it or is doing it, and you find a way to get a hold of them, and you pick their brains, or you go to work for them. And, you know, if you had asked me now, you know, looking back over my career, that I was going to end up here when I was in Pepsi, I would have told you, would you, Jerry, stop smoking that stuff?
I never have.
Would you, stop. We'll use another name, Jerry. But it would have been, the things that have happened in my career since then are just not logical. Like, they're just out there. And it all came about just by asking questions and saying, you know, there was a very defined point where, you know, I always had this goal in my mind that I wanted to kind of get to a certain point with a large multinational, Pepsi, tick. I wanted them to pay for an MBA. And the day came where my boss said, right, here you go. We're going to pay for your MBA, and you're going to travel and great college and everything else. And that was the day I handed in my notice. Because just, I can't explain to you, the day he gave it to me, I went, in my stomach, I just went, this isn't me, I'm out of here. Because I was looking down the line, even at what was ahead of me in terms of life, and I didn't like what I saw, so I just jumped out without a plan. And you're talking about the different companies. I've been kind of maybe a little bit plodding in the dark a bit as well at times, not knowing what the next step is. But now, as it happens with my career now, you know, I'm very lucky. Every day I get a chance to make a difference. And that sounds corny, but I do. So even this morning before I was here with you, I had a client in my office in Ashford and Wicklow. And, you know, I'm there and I'm working with them on the mind. I'm working on their goals. And I'm just helping them to even balance up their personal life with the business side, which is very important, and challenging them. But all of that can be traced back to that phone call in that phone booth back in 19...
That you made to your dad.
Yep.
Can I ask you about stigma? Because when somebody suffers a mental health issue, we hear all the time how difficult it is to overcome that personally and then to get right back up on your feet, and also then to be accepted for what you may once have been, that some people may look on you as changed. Have you anything to say about that? Because you're an example. I only met you for the first time today, but you've certainly come such a distance.
Yeah. Well, that's part of the reason, I guess, why I'm talking about it openly, is that before it happened to me, I suppose I would have seen it as a stigma. And then when you go through it, and then, you know, what I've realised is the more you talk about it, the more acceptable it is. And at least people can kind of take the pressure off feeling bad that they're a failure. Like, how did I end up here? I mean, look, I mean, on paper, there's no reason why that should happen to me. You know, I did well in Leaving Cert. I was an honours student. I got an honours degree in biochemical engineering. I had a big job, you know, whatever, with a multinational. But there I was, looking to end it. That's not good. But, you know, the when you say the stigma, yeah, I think that most people, in my experience, though, when you get to talk to them, can relate, especially now, to a mental challenge. Because most challenges anyway now are mental. And fair enough, you might end up having to go to a hospital, or you might have to go just take time off work or whatever else. It's much more common than you realise. And just as an example, I was doing a bit of research there recently, but the CEO of Lloyds Bank in November 2011, took medical leave for fatigue leave due to stress. And that was mental. That guy's on a package of over 8 million sterling, and he took stress leave due to, you know, fatigue and the mind and everything else. So, but he came out and said that that's what he was about. That's what happened. Now, 6 months later, he came back and says he's recharged and he's got enough challenges now. I'll tell you, he's got more challenges than he probably wants now at the moment. So when you see more and more people like that, you see Adam Clayton coming out and talking about, you know, supporting the Pats thing and everything else. That's all great. So it's all good. And I just think at the end of the day, you know, to me, stigma, at the end of the day, we're all trying to do our best as humans, and we've got much more in common as humans than we realise. And when you're in my position, where you're working with chief executives and entrepreneurs and MDs, and in some cases sports people, and then just regular punters I meet the odd time, you realise, like, at all ages, we're all just the same. We all got the same concerns, and we all want to look the best, and we put on these faces. And when you realise that, you kind of go, do you know what? There's no point in having a big issue to do with stigma, because everybody falls off the bus at some point. And even the best of the best will get caught out. The best of the best. I mean, I work with some seriously successful people, and they will tell you that as well. And I've worked with them after that, and I've worked with them during that. They'll tell you that everybody can get caught out. So, but yet people are walking around thinking that, you know, we're all bulletproof when we're not. So I don't know if that's any
absolutely help. You've written, and your new book is called Inspire Me. It's a fantastic name for it, and people are deriving more assistance and help from reading your experience as well and listening to you with me today. You've now written a stage play called The Waiting Room.
Yeah.
Around your experience again?
No. But
different?
This is one of the gifts. Like, I've received many gifts out of that whole dark time. One of the gifts was, I mean, I was a C student for English at best. But when I went through that period, I suppose, and I started to look at, well, what's Shane about? What do I like? I discovered a love of writing, believe it or not. And I started to write. I now wrote a lot for business. I wrote the book Inspire Me. And then I also wrote a play about 8 years ago, one-act play, which won an award with the Irish Playwrights Guild. And then I've had this idea for a full-length play called The Waiting Room, which is a comedy. It's not based on my experiences, but it does, in a comedic way, I suppose, take people on a journey over an hour and a half, a fun journey that I suppose will probably make them question certain things that they're doing, but also, in a fun way, add some ideas. So when they walk out of the theatre, they'll have laughed their socks off, is the goal, but they'll also be thinking, maybe down in the pub afterwards, you know, that's making me think a little bit about, you know, making a few changes. And that's the goal. And we've had a great reaction to it so far. But we're in the middle of a crowdfunding project at the moment to try and raise funds.
What is crowdfunding?
Crowdfunding is a relatively new phenomenon that's been enabled by the internet, whereby projects such as, like, this play is looking for funds to get it off the ground. And we're looking for, instead of trying to get a large amount of money from, say, the Arts Council, we're looking for small amounts of money from a lot of people. So a small contribution from a lot of people can allow you to get the project off the ground. Now, it kind of kick-started with a company called Kickstarter.com in the United States about 3 years ago. And you might have seen there's a lot of profile around Zach Braff recently, the actor in Scrubs. He funded his movie for over $2 million. I think he did it in 3 days. And so the reason he said he was doing that was because of creative control. So at least he's got the funds to do it the way he wants. There's no interference from investors or the studio. He can now make it the way he wants. And as well as that, the difference between that and, say, sponsorship is that in a crowdfunding scenario, you're given different options, maybe 7 to 10. And each option, you get something back in return. So you're getting value for everything. So, for example, with our play, say, if you sponsor at the 40 euro mark, you get 2 tickets to the play. So you're kind of buying tickets in advance, plus a signed poster and a signed program, plus a signed script. And then there's options up to 100 euros, even 1,000, and 1,700 euros is our top option, Jerry, if you want to go for that. that one's open at the moment, Jerry, actually. So,
I'm going to have to think about that deeply, unfortunately.
Look into my eyes.
Do you reckon you're going to get there?
Yeah.
You're going to make it with this?
Yeah, well, as of today, we're at 52%, just about the $4,000 mark. Our target is 7,500, which is high. The website we use is a website called funded.ie. It's a brilliant website. So if somebody wanted to check us out, funded.ie, click on performance and they'll see the waiting room down on the page. We are going to get there, but there's a bit of work involved. And as I was saying to you during the break, that Louth is actually playing an unusual role in the play, because a friend of mine, when I wrote the first draft, and she said, look, we'll organise a reading for you for people. And normally, that's, I said, that's great. Just get maybe 8 to 10 people, you know, that's normally what you'd need, and we'll get a few actors. I turned up and she had organised 80 people in the Crown Plaza hotel. So
in Dundalk. Fantastic.
Which anybody in theatre would know, like a first reading, you don't do that in front of that amount of people. So it was either going to crash and burn or else it was going to work. And luckily, it was probably one of the top 10 moments of my life. It was a phenomenal reaction, and it gave me the confidence to say, okay, we're going to do this.
And take it on.
Yeah, so what I'm trying to do basically is raise funds to create jobs. It's not to put money in Shane's pocket. It's to raise funds so I can actually hire professional actors. We've got a director on board, he's a great director. And the plan is we've got a deadline, 10th of July.
Fantastic. It's a wonderful, wonderful story. And I just look at you and I know you are going to do this. And please God, someday it'll tread the boards in all the great venues in this country and beyond. I really do wish you well.
Thanks, Jerry.
The book is called Inspire Me. It's available from Easons.
Easons and on Amazon as well.
Yeah, it's the story of this man and more like what, and lovely little quotes and everything in it that can help you through day by day. You're a great story. You're an example. Continued success to you. And it really has been great to meet you on the show this afternoon. Thanks a million for joining me, Shane Craddock.
Thanks very much, Jerry.
The Late Lunch, weekdays from 1:30 on your station, LMFM.
Now, the 132 number plate, it's a farce. It's another new year in Ireland, the 1st of July. You can register your car. You know, Dee, this is coming. Tony told us, remember we were talking about it, it's the new thing for this year. So you have a January 131 and 132. And to coincide with that, Nick Smith & Sons on the North Road in Drogheda, the local Ford dealers here, are having an open day, and they're having lots of good deals on offer. And it's the final of the Gary Kelly great car draw as well. That's happening this coming weekend. And to coincide with this, Smiths have finally kindly provided us with a deluxe valet to give away every day this week on the Late Lunch. So each day, courtesy of Smiths, we have a deluxe valet. My car could do it a valet badly at the minute. I'm sure there's a lot of motorists out there. And when you get them valet, don't they look... Well, I have to say, it comes up great, mine, when you get
they're
it.
They're like new.
They
yeah,
are, aren't
like
they? New. Inside. And Smiths will make a great job of it. We promised we'll talk to you about this as well. But I can't give it to you folks for nothing. So here we go. What drives you round the bend? We want to know what drives you round the bend. Deirdre, I'll put you on the spot. What drives you round the bend?
Does it have to be motor related? Oh, we'll try. Okay.
Oh, come on. Give me something with the car.
I can
then.
Think of one already. Okay, you know when you're at the petrol station and you're about to go and fill up your car, and sometimes it's busy and you're in the queue waiting to get on?
Yeah.
And somebody's parked at the petrol pump and they're in getting their roll and their coffee.
Yes.
And they're shopping and... You're waiting to get your car full of petrol, no?
And you're saying, where are they? So they go in and they're getting the roll and everything done. And I know where there's maybe one pump you're trying to get, there's three cars in the queue, the others are full. That drives you around the bend. I'll tell you what drives me in a motoring sense. But look, it can be anything that drives you around the bend. If you go shopping, if you're out for a meal, at school, at work, something drives you around the bend. We want to hear from you. I'll tell you my motoring one. I think I said this before. You go to the toll plaza, you're paying your toll on the roads, and I don't have the beepy thing, I have to go and pay the few bob, and somebody arrives in front of you with no coins, or they throw the coins, if you go to the other one, you know, the basket, and they miss, and they have to get out and pick them up. But the worst for me is when they go and they decide to have a full-blown conversation with the person in the toll booth. I just cannot take that. I'd love to ram them from behind, to be honest with you, to get them to move on. I cannot take it. I have no patience. I've not had a lot of patience generally, but I have no patience for that. I detest it. Toll booth takers, take the money and tell them to on their way, because the toll is supposed to get you from A to B faster. How can you get there faster if this, they write a book while they're paying the €1 or whatever? That drives me round the bend. What drives you round the bend? Is there anything in life drives you round the bend? You can call in now, give Claire a ring and just give her your name and details. We'll chat to you. 1850 715 958. We have a valet, or you can text me to 53958. Yeah, that's Mr. Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, Learning to Fly. Now, the Bailiborough Festival starts tomorrow and it runs till Sunday, and there's something for everyone in the family. Drama, music, teddy bears, picnic, market stalls, dog show, woof woof, muscle car display, treasure hunt. a muscle car display. I must find out what that's about. Family fun day and lots more happening in Ballybor from now till the weekend. And there's still some tickets available for tomorrow night's performance of Awake in the West. It's a fantastic play by Michael Joseph Ginley and it's presented by the Menalty Drama Group. It takes place in the community school tomorrow evening, Tuesday at 8:30, and you can get tickets from Clark's XL, Bailey Stores and the Bailey Hotel. Or if you want to log on, it's BaileyborhFestival.com. So they're all going crazy in Ballybor with the festival for the next week. And shortly on Late Lunch, we're going to be finding out what's happening to a man who joined us on the show a few years ago. He has his second book out in the trilogy series. Tony Whelan's with us shortly.
The Late Lunch, weekdays from 1:30 on your station, LMFM.
Anne's not happy with me. She says, people like Jerry who has no patience. I work on the toll and drivers that have a chat are asking questions, not chatting, says Anne. Anne, thanks for the message. Yeah, but look, have a quick chat with the man, will you? Don't write a book with them. You know what I mean? Don't ask them what they're having for their dinner, Anne. You know what I mean? Tony Whelan's laughing. Yeah, the man from the Knoll is back with us on Late Lunch today. He's recently published the second book of his trilogy. This one's called Amy's Amazon. And we're going to catch up on what's happened to him since he was with us last on Late Lunch. When, remind me, Tony, was it?
It was 3 years ago, Jerry, 2010.
God, where does time go? It flies by. Hey, do you agree with me about that toll thing? Or are you totally... you don't mind, do you, if you pull up behind somebody and they're writing a book at the toll?
I'm going to be very safe and say I didn't hear that bit of the show, Jerry, so I don't think I can quite comment on that one now.
You're a chancer, you know that. You just don't want to rock the boat, as they say. Anyway, congrats. The second book, you did tell me last time you were here that there were three in the series. That's the second right. One is out now and available. We're going to talk about in a while where you can get it, actually. Trilosophy. Will you just explain that to us again?
Absolutely, yeah. Trilosophy is really a combination of two words, thriller and philosophy. And I suppose my thinking when I started writing was I wanted people to give people an opportunity to think about, you know, what you might call the big questions of life. You know, why am I here? What's life all about? You know, when you were talking to Shane earlier, people can get a bit lost and wonder, you know, what's my purpose or whatever. So to give people an opportunity to think about these questions. But I suppose what I found just in talking to people about these kind of things is that for a lot of people, the idea of going to a bookshop and picking up a philosophy book or a self-improvement book or whatever, as Shane was saying about men particularly might see it as a sign of weakness or whatever. So I wanted to write about these things, but do it in a way to make it maybe accessible to an audience that wouldn't normally read these kind of books. So they're set as fictional thrillers. They have all the ingredients, I hope, of a good thriller. Lots of excitement and suspense and intrigue. But there's a kind of a strand of philosophy running through them. So as the main character, you know, is in the first book running around the world and the second book is running around the Amazon trying to escape people, she meets different kind of characters and has conversations and discussions with them, learns more about herself. In the second book, very much learns more about the environment. So it's a combination of thriller and philosophy. Thrillosophy.
So in other words, when you read this, you'll have the good read of the thriller, you're saying, but yet afterwards when you absorb what's there, it does prompt the mind to think about different things.
Exactly. And, you know, some people have said to me, you know, love the thriller, but not really into all that deep stuff or whatever. And that's absolutely fine. From that perspective, I suppose my hope would be that they'll get a few hours of good enjoyment and entertainment out of it, as they would out of any kind of good thriller. But if people want to, it just gives them that opportunity, I suppose. It doesn't kind of preach, you know, it doesn't say here are the answers, but certainly it asks what I think are the big questions, the important questions, and maybe poses some possible answers. People can agree or disagree. To be honest, I suppose my perspective is that just thinking about these things is a good thing in and of itself. What answers people come to, like Shane was saying with his 6 months with his counsellor, at the end he said, you have to go and find the answers for yourself. So it's not about giving people answers, but certainly about asking the questions and encouraging and giving people that opportunity to think about these things.
Now, Amy's Amazon builds on Laura's legacy,
that's
which is
right.
The first, and Amy is Laura.
Yes, yes.
And it's really about the Big Brother scenario that we often hear about and the environment as
yes.
well. And that theme is the big theme, without giving too much away, that runs through it and that. The little guy, the person who stands up for the environment against this might and strength, it's a no-win situation, really, if the people with the money and the power and the influence want to have their way.
Well, you know, I suppose you could take that view, but throughout history, you know, the individual has made changes and has made differences. You know, so if you look at, you know, any of the great figures of history, I suppose Gandhi, an example, someone very much in the news at the moment because he's so ill, Nelson Mandela. You know, these are individual people, ordinary guys or ladies, no different really from any of the rest of us, and yet had the courage of their conviction. And I suppose one of the things I would feel very strongly is, if you're going to do something positive and you're going to make a difference, it doesn't have to be world-changing. Now, I mentioned those people because we all know about them. But, you know, somebody like, as I say, Shane, doing what he's doing, excuse me, someone like Tracy, who the day after a really traumatic event, you know, her first kind of action then is to go out and tell other people about this to save them from going through the same. So that's a similar kind of an approach to the Gandhis or the Mandelas, in that it's thinking about other people, it's selflessness, it's thinking about the community, about the society, and it's trying to give something to improve people's lives.
So you can make a difference no matter who you are or what you do. One small step, as they say.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely,
it builds from there.
Yeah. As they say, if you make one person smile during the day, you've made a difference.
You've achieved a lot. Yeah. That's so true. You have an unusual way about your writing, in that you're not one that sits down and goes at it consistently. You're not one, you know, that maybe has an idea and leaves it for a long time. You're a bursty writer, and you go away. Talk to me a little bit about that.
Well, you see, the whole writing process to me is a bit of a mystery, to be honest. It was 2004 or so when I got this notion that I'm going to write a book. You know, things were difficult. I felt I needed something else to kind of to focus on and to concentrate on. This idea came to me out of the blue. And what I have found over writing these two books is that while I'm kind of at home, I have a day job like everyone else to keep the bank manager and all that, as you have to. You know, the kids are there, you have your household, you know, chores and bills. And I find to do the actual writing itself, I just need to get away. And when I do that, and, you know, so I'll go away, you know, preferably for about a month at a time, and just kind of relax, get out of that every day, kind of, you know, doing this, that and the other. And then the story just seems to arise. I don't kind of plan it as such. I don't kind of, you know, plot it out. I just sit down and start typing. The story arises. And I find that's what I have to do for that creative, actually writing the first instance of the story. Now, after that, for all the editing and the publishing process and the publicising it process and all of that, that's fine. But for the actual creative writing part, I find I need to get away somewhere quiet, somewhere calm, and just let the story
so you
arise.
Get in the zone, so to speak.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
You touched on the publishing there, because you've independently published the first one, and you've gone this route as well for the second one. And for an independently published book, you sold a lot of copies, I have to say, for the first one, and I'm sure you're hoping to repeat that and better at this time round. But, you know, It's not easy when you have to plow your own furrow. Is that fair to say? Would you rather have been signed up to a publishing house and let them run with it?
It's a very difficult question. There are pros and cons of each. As I understand it, you know, if you sign up to a publishing house, the big positive is, you know, you have this massive kind of distribution, marketing. You know, you don't have to worry about the finances. All that kind of stuff happens for you, which is, you know, great, I presume. But at the other hand, I think you probably lose a lot of the kind of creative control. Like Amy's Amazon, now I'm biased, so of course I'd say this, I love the cover of it. And it was myself and, you know, a few very close friends who kind of came up with the concept and did the cover design. I couldn't do that if that was published through the kind of the normal publishing process. The publishing house would decide what they want on the cover. So it has that positive, you keep the whole control of it. You're much closer to the whole process throughout. But there's no doubt you wouldn't want to be doing it to be the next J.K. Rowling, you know.
So who, I'm trying to get at, reads what you write? You know, who do you give it by? You know, the way you have an editor or you send it to a publisher and they go through it. With a lot of books, you'll find the best will tell you. They take it apart, they send it back, you redraft, you change it, whatever. How does that work with you?
Well, the way it worked in the instance now of Amy's Amazon is I finished Amy's Amazon in my head, kind of. The story was written down on paper, done in July of last year, and we launched it at the end of last month. What happened in that almost year in between is I engaged myself an editor, and we went through it and through it and through it. And she did fantastic work on it and kind of helped me to tighten it up and maybe develop characters a bit more or whatever. That took probably until Christmas. Then with a company here in Drogheda, Choice Publishing, they do self-publishing, so they assist with kind of getting ISBN numbers and all the kind of the regulation around it. And then kind of by, you know, Easter, we were pretty much ready, and then started kind of, you know, doing our marketing through social media, you know, talking to friends, talking to yourself, Jerry, everyone we can. And we held the launch in the Borgash Theatre then at the end of last month. From here on, it's really, you know, a continuation of that, just trying to, I suppose, let people know it exists, firstly, and hopefully encourage them that it's a worthy investment of $9.99. So, you know, I approach bookshops, which I, you know, I walk into the bookshop literally and say, will you put a few copies of this on the shelf? You're doing stuff like this with yourself. The local media, I have to say, are fantastic. The likes of the Drogheda and Fingal Independent. And, you know, on the web, social media, and you just try and spread the
push
word.
Push it as much as you can.
Push it as much as you can, but also very, very reliant on word of mouth. The reality is, you know, if I was pushing this as much as I can, but anybody who read it wasn't kind of pushing it further, it's not going to go very far. So you're very reliant then on the people who read it, the people who are interested in it, then them talking about it. And you know, I've had some fantastic experiences, which really for me is the reward, where somebody reads the book and then you hear what they think. It's great if they come to me and tell me, but very often then I'd be kind of saying, you know, it's great to hear, but like, what else are they going to say? But when you hear, when somebody else says to me that so-and-so read the book and here's what they thought about it, that's a, it's a fantastic,
you get a great reading. Kick out of that.
Yeah.
The third
yeah.
one is where at this stage?
The third one is out there somewhere, waiting for me to give it the time, I suppose, just for it to arise. I have a name for it. It's going to be called Robbie's Revelation. The three names of the books, when I wrote the first book, was called Laura's Legacy, and my my middle girl is called Laura, and I initially set out to write a book, and it was only when I was about probably two-thirds of the way through Laura's Legacy that, without me having feeling that I had much control over it, I felt one book wasn't going to do it. It was going to be three books. So having named the first one after one child, you know, there was no possible outcome.
You had to bring the three of them into it. All the ructions if that didn't happen. God, I did say you're the supreme diplomat at the start, and I do know why now. Where is it available?
The book is available in a number of bookshops at the moment. Easton's and Ashburn have it. Easton's Wholesale have taken it, and I know they're sending it out this week to here in Drogheda, to Dundalk, to Blanchardstown, Liffey Valley, and of course their flagship store in O'Connell Street. In Nace, Barker and Jones Bookshop have it in Nace. So far they're the bookshops, and it looks as though any Easton's or Debray bookshops, if they don't have it in stock when people ask for it, will
get
order
it. Is it available online?
And then online, then you can get it, as always, on Amazon.com, although I have no control over pricing or whatever there, or you can get it off my own website, anthonywhelan.ie, and it's available in paperback and ebook.
And you're signing in Easton's Ashbourne, is it?
Signing in Easton's Ashbourne this coming Saturday, the 29th of June. We'll be there from 12 till 3. So hoping to meet plenty of people there.
So if you're listening, pop in and meet the man himself. You've two books. Is that the original two you have there? Have you two to spare for our listeners today?
Oh, I do, of course, Jerry.
Well, if you want a copy of Laura's Legacy and Amy's Amazon, we're going to give the two together because it'd be nice. And Tony's going to sign them to you. Just text Tony to 53958 now. The quicker you're in, the better. We'll pick one of the early ones. And Tony will sign these books and send them out to you. And you can enjoy this man's talent. And the third one then will be on the way. You can make the set. And then you can insist that he signs that one as well, and you'll have collector's items in years to come. Tony Whelan, great to catch up with you again. Wish you well with the third one, and I'm sure they're going to enjoy themselves in Ashbourne on Saturday when they pop in to meet you there. Great story. Thanks a million, Tony Whelan.
Been an absolute pleasure, Jerry. Thank you.
The Late Lunch, weekdays from 1:30 on your station, LMFM.
Team Kerry are working away in their preparations for the 2013 Dublin City Marathon. Happens on the October bank holiday weekend, and each year for the past number of years we followed the team to the marathon, and this year Martha Riley, Karen McIntyre and Mick Hand are the three people we're going to be focusing on. Dee, they joined you when I was off on the week's holidays.
Yeah, they had just started. They had their first meet up behind them and their first run behind them, and they were starting off on their first schedule, which I think basically runs about 3 to 4 runs a week building up from a mile up to 2 miles, and that's the first 4 weeks. They just slowly build it up every week with Dave, and I think they're up to about 4 to 5 miles now. Oh, I can be corrected on that one.
A little birdie has told us they're building up all right, but you know what, David Carey, you couldn't but with that man encouraging you. But you decided when they were here that they were going to keep a little audio diary for us.
Snippets, yeah, just to keep us interested, because we are kind of going to be joined by them in studio when they get to those big landmarks, such as they're going to start with a 5K, 10K, build up to a half marathon, and then the marathon. There's various, I suppose, goals that they're all aiming for. So yeah, we said we get them to keep via the new technology. They're all on their smartphones or iPhones, going to keep little video diaries. Told them just to give us a little snippet of what their training is like for them. You know, if they have niggly injuries, or you know, if they're finding it particularly tough.
If they don't feel like it someday, which can happen.
Well,
it's just a day that you mightn't just feel up to it.
We'll be
don't tell David Carey.
But yeah, they're sending them into us via their smartphones. We're getting them to email their diary, their snippets
great.
Into us.
So who have we first?
We first up today is Martha Riley.
This is Martha Riley, week two of Team Carey. It's Team Carey week two. It's very hot. The runs are tough, but I'm giving all I've got. 5 nights a week and 1 and 2 miles. I sincerely hope it's going to be worthwhile. This morning at 7, I went out for a run. Lovely and peaceful in the beautiful morning sun. But I neglected to do my warm-up regime. And now, I'm sorry to say, I have a very sore knee. So warm-ups from now on, I promise to do, even if it's only for a minute or two. I should have listened to David's advice as he shows us our warm-ups on a Wednesday night. Really enjoying the training. Actually did 3 miles this morning and hoping to onwards and upwards. We'll be there 20 weeks to go. Thanks. Bye. Martha Riley here, Team Carey, week three, almost week four. Just didn't get a chance to report in. Have been doing okay. Got only out for 3 runs this week. Bold me. Slane was on and it took precedent. Did a run after Slane, which was pretty rough, but I did it, and that's the main thing. Haven't ran since, so out tonight with Team Carey, which is actually week four, and going to try and do 4, if not 5 miles, but the further the day goes along, the less likely it is to do the 5. Managing it okay. Definitely have aches and pains in the legs, back gets sore sometimes, but one should definitely warm up, as David suggests, but when one does not do that, it causes problems. Other than that, flying on for the 5 mile is on Saturday week, so that should be interesting. Might not come first, second or third, but definitely we'll be finishing it. We'll be reporting back for week four soon. Thanks.
Good woman, Martha Riley. The Pam Ayres of Team Carey for this year. A poet and she doesn't know it. Running after the Slane concert, Martha, whose leg are you pulling? Are you joking me? Anyway, she's doing her best, isn't she? Nice. That's great, just to get, you know, the feeling for it, as it is for them, isn't it?
That's it, exactly.
You're getting a wart and all. That's how she's feeling, how she's going. Well done, Martha. Love the diaries. Keep them coming to us. And we want poetry now every time. A nice little poem in your report to us, Martha, would be great. Next up, Mick Hand.
Hello, all LMFM listeners. This is Mick Hand here from Wisteria Lane. Just finished my second week training there on Wednesday night. Knackered. Myself and Jap were running around. My brother Aidan's on holidays, and my brother Patrick decided to go on holidays too. But we did 9 laps, myself and Jap. I think we did 10 then, and we lost count. Jap made me do another lap. And then he comes along and tells me we did 10. So, knackered. But well worth it. Cup of tea afterwards. Couldn't wait for the talk. Sorry, David. I have to go home to the wee boys. Talk to you later, folks. Bye.
Hello, everybody. I feel a bit hoarse. It's 20 to 3 in the morning. Just waiting to get picked up like a lunatic. I'm heading to the Tara Dawn run. All in a good cause. See what happens later on. I might be on then. Okay, bye.
Mick, what happened in the Tara Dawn? We're going to hear more from Mick sometime soon. I hope he got back, but I'm sure he did. Anyway, Wisteria Lane, Desperate Housewives, Mick Hand, everybody's gone on holidays. really, really gone on holidays.
Yeah, well, we don't know where or what happened after the Dawn Run, but they are going to be keeping updates. We're going to listen to Karen McAteer after news headlines at 3 o'clock and find out how she's the final of the three musketeers from Team Kerry, be finding out her progress.
Mick sounded a bit rough there, didn't he, before the Tara
well,
Dawn Run?
Well, would you be if you were up? At what time did he say?
We were talking to Shay Sheridan ahead of the run, and I know it was a fantastic success, but up at 20 to 3, Wisteria Lane in... Where is that in the northeast? Anyway, did you hear him saying that?
Yeah.
Does he live in Wisteria Lane?
Maybe he does.
God almighty. That's news to me. Anyway, Mick, there was two sides of Mick there. He was being mothered. Everyone was going on holidays and he was being left behind. He was a bit cheesed about that. And then, of course, we had the Tara Dawn Run. But they have that milestone coming up very soon indeed. After three, we will be hearing from the third musketeer, as you say, Karen McAteer. And we're going to be joined on Late Lunch as well by Drogheda United manager Mick Cook. Drogheda heading to Sweden for the Europa League.
The Late Lunch, weekdays from 1:30 on your station, LMFM.
You're with the Late Lunch on LMFM Radio. Still to come on the show, we're going to be having a word with Mick Cook, the Drogheda United manager, following the Europa League draw at lunchtime that sees Drogheda heading to Malmo in Sweden to play Malmo. And I remember the day Malmo played in Drogheda, actually. Yeah, Dundalk couldn't play the game at home and the match was played in United Park back then. So, coincidence, history repeating itself, as they say. Now, we asked you a little bit earlier on to tell us what drives you around the bend, and thanks to everybody who's been in touch. But today I want to have a little word with a lady from Boyerstown. Her name is Moira White. Afternoon, Moira.
Good afternoon, how are you?
I'm very good, and yourself?
Not too bad at all, thank you.
Moira, what drives you around the bend?
When you're in a room and you're talking to someone and then you go down to another room and you leave it and the person is talking back and you can't hear a word they're saying, that really drives me crazy.
Moira, I have to say, when we saw your message, everybody in here laughed because I think we all experience it in our homes.
Oh, I know, it happens all the time. I swear, I do it myself, but when it's done to me, then I go, oh God.
But I think we should all, and you get mad about it, don't you, when you can't hear and there's somebody still babbling away and you don't know what they're saying, actually.
Exactly. You could say the wrong thing too.
So what's the secret? Knock all the walls and have open plan, is that it?
I don't know. I don't hear plugs.
And you're right, maybe it's as well that we actually don't hear some of the things that are said as well.
Exactly.
Anyway, we loved it because you hit the nail on the head and so many of us in here could empathise with it and understand what it's all about as well. Well, look, I want to give you the valet. Do you drive yourself?
I don't drive myself, but I have to because my husband drives.
Good woman. Well, Smiths of Drogheda want to offer you a deluxe valet. You won't know the car when she comes back. It'll
Lovely.
Be that good looking outside and inside. That's your prize today, Moira.
You're very
and
kind, thank you.
Not at all. And what's the hubby's name?
It's Kevin White.
Kevin White is going to have the best looking car in Boyerstown very shortly when he picks up his valet. Do you want to say hello to anyone before you leave us?
I just want to say hello to my mother. She was 80 yesterday and we had a lovely meal, a lovely day for her. And I have two lovely girls, Kira and Chloe, so I want to say hello to them as well.
What's your mum's name?
It's Elsie.
Well done.
She killed me for saying that. She's a great woman.
Yeah, 80 years young yesterday.
Yeah, 80 years young, definitely.
Isn't that fantastic? Well, we wish her all the very best on a very special occasion and wish you well with the valet that's yours.
And to all my family. Well, thanks very
great
much.
Great stuff.
Jerry.
Lovely to talk
thank
to you.
You.
God
Bye,
bless you.
Thank you.
Bye. That's Moira White in Boyerstown. We will want to know tomorrow again on Late Lunch from you. What drives you around the bend? So if there is something, think about it and you can let us know on the show tomorrow and it could be you winning that valet with Smiths of Drogheda. We have a big weekend coming up this weekend, the Gary Kelly car draw and the new 132 registration plate on the way for the 1st of July. Back to Team Kerry, the third member that we're going to hear from now, and before we do I want to tell you Wisteria Lane is Mick Hand's flower shop in Dunleer. Shouldn't I have known that? Anyway, thanks for that one and delighted to acknowledge it. Karen McAteer is next up. How's she getting on?
Hi, this is Karen McAteer. This is the end of my first week training. So training has gone fairly well this week, apart unfortunately from Sunday and Monday night. Unfortunately, I was on call and it was quite busy both nights. I could feel my training this week. All my muscles and joints were sore. but I feel much better and in much better form with it. And I could actually notice the two nights that I missed training, I was starting to get into bad form. It's nearly like a tonic at the minute to get out running. The weather was absolutely fantastic this week for it. I almost felt like Shane was sending me the good weather to try and keep me out. The weather seemed to put you into better form and motivate you more as well to keep running. I'm hoping now this week that I'll make up for the two nights I lost out on with doing them on the nights that we're supposed to be resting. So I'm looking forward to this week, and the weather's supposed to be good this week. So hopefully I'll keep going. Okay, that's all for now. Good night.
This is the end of week two of the training, and I have done okay this week. I missed two trainings, so I was a bit disappointed with that. The weather again was fantastic. I found the training a little bit harder this week. I was a bit more tired, and it was also busier socially. There was a lot more going on this week that made it more difficult to get all the trainings in. But I'm happy enough with myself this week. I'm up to 4K. So roll on this week. Okay, bye-bye. So this is the end of the third week of training. Found it very difficult this week to get out, to actually get the time to get out. I was finishing up in my old job, so I was concentrating on trying to get organised for the new job, and it just seemed impossible to make the time to get out running. And I was on call this weekend as well, so it was too busy to get out. So quite frustrated with that and disappointed in myself, to be honest. You know, I just feel like a little bit of a failure at the minute. But I'm keeping optimistic that I'll get out a good bit this week. So planning to start going tomorrow again at the 3 mile. I had been doing quite well, but hopefully we'll get things sorted out this week. Okay, that's it. Bye bye.
Karen, you're not a failure, love. Not at all. These things happen. That's life. You're a vet. You're on call. You're busy. You just walk around it. And you get to it when you can, and you do your very best, and I know you are, and you will be on that start line come October. I know you will, and David Carey's going to make sure you will as well. Thanks for the honesty, folks, in all your audio diaries of Team Carey's preparations for the Dublin City Marathon 2013. We're right up to speed with them all now. We're going to keep following them through the weeks to see how they're getting on, and I love it. They're giving it to us, honestly. And just for you three, Martha, Michael and Karen, here's Imelda May and Roadrunner. Yeah, Imelda May there and Roadrunner. We want to dedicate that to everybody involved with Team Carry. And in fact, everybody preparing for the marathon, because all the work, the hard work starts now and has for the last few weeks and will go on over the summer and autumn months to that big day on October Bank Holiday Monday. There'll be nobody slowing down with David Carey. We all know that one. And again, we wish Martha, Karen and Michael all the very best, and we'll be continuing following their audio diaries here on Late Lunch over the weeks and months ahead. Up next on the show, it's Drogheda United manager Mick Cook.
The Late Lunch, weekdays from 1:30 on your station, LMFM.
Signed copies of Tony Whelan's book going to Joan Dunn. Well done to you. Now, Drogheda United go into the Europa League qualifying first round, and they're up against Malmo from Sweden. The draw made at lunchtime today, and joining me on the show to give his reaction to the draw is Drogheda manager Mick Cook. Mick, happy camper?
Very happy, Jerry. Good afternoon to you. Yeah, it's one of the big teams, obviously, in Europe. They're doing reasonably well. Obviously, this year in the league, they're fourth in the league at the moment, behind like big clubs like Helsingborg, Gothenburg and Elfsborg. So, like, it's going to be a hard task, but there's a good target there for the winners as well, particularly for us, the winners of the Tri Hibernian of Scotland. So, I'd like to get through this one. So, I pick me with against Pat Fenlon.
Yeah, it'd be back to a man you locked horns with as well on his time here in the League of Ireland. Mick, to go to Sweden and the logistics of that must be a big relief for the club, because there are some far-flung places you could have gone to.
Yes, obviously, you certainly wanted to stay away from some of the Russian countries. Like, I know Pats have been drawn away to Lithuania. They've had a nightmare over the last couple of seasons, and certainly, like, we're very, very lucky from a point of view. I think that we would probably go through Copenhagen to get there, which obviously would be a lot easier than going out to some of these Russian countries. No, we're very pleased with the draw. Say it's a lot off the minds of the board of directors, finance-wise, from that point of view. And certainly, you'd expect a good crowd up in Tala for the home game first.
Now, your home, is that right, in the first leg on the 4th?
Yes, that's right, Thursday week.
But before that, like, obviously we have Shamrock Rovers on Friday and then Cork City on Monday in the quarterfinal of the League Cup. But we've more pressing engagements before we get to Thursday week.
So you'll be looking to those games first. For you in particular, managing in a European club context, looking forward to it?
Yes, obviously it's a big challenge. You know, to represent obviously a country at this level is a great honour, and hopefully we can do ourselves proud. Like Gerard has done very well previously in European ties, and as you well know yourself, we're in the width of a goal line of progressing to the league stages. So we will leave certainly no stone unturned already. We've been in contact with people. Dermot McKenna has a good friend who's with BK Hacken. If you remember last year, Gabriel Sava was over there for a couple of days training with them. So hopefully we get some inside information off Dermot's friend, and that will help us. But no, certainly I'll be ringing plenty of people around. And also Malmo played Shamrock Rovers last year in the friendly here, so I'll be giving Stephen Kenny a shout on that one.
So the 4th of July is the first leg in Tala, and then the second leg to follow a week later away. It's a big ask though, isn't it? Because as you said, this team, Malmo, are 4th in the Swedish League. They're well in there for the shake-up and the title this season.
Yes, obviously it is a big ask. They have a big support apparently. They play in a 24,000 all-seater stadium, and apparently their average crowds are about 18,000. So like, it's going to be a tough task, Jerry, but as I said, already we're working towards that, unfortunately. We have two major games before that, and we're concentrating them first. But at the moment, there's no stone being left unturned. I know Roisin is working very hard on travel arrangements already. And Robbie Horgan will probably go much to playing this Thursday. They're actually playing BK Hacking, which is a friend of Darren McKenna. So hopefully between that gentleman and Robbie Horgan, they'll take plenty of notes, and we give ourselves every chance of progressing.
Hibernian is a big carrot, isn't it, if you were to get through to play a Scottish side, and Cliftonville up the road have done very well in the Champions League. They've got Celtic, and that will be an incentive to the players. But in an occasion like this, Mick, and I know the League Cup and FAI Cup are important, but for players and the players you've signed and the experienced players, I think of Declan O'Brien and that, this is where they want to pit their wits.
Well, this is where all players want to play, and every player likes to have on their CV that he competed in Europe. And certainly of late, like League of Ireland clubs have done reasonably well in Europe and got through a couple of rounds. So hopefully we can continue in the vein of that manner which St. Pat's did last year in the previous year, winning a couple of rounds. And as I said, there'll be no stone left unturned. We have players like Fabio O'Brien, who obviously was there with Drogheda before. Other than that, I don't think Gary O'Neill has been there, obviously, with Shamrock Rovers as well. But no, everybody wants on their CV that he played in Europe. As I said, we had a few days off after the Cork City game, we're totally refreshed. Our training was very, very good over the weekend, and as I said, we've a hell of a lot to look forward to in the coming months.
Mick, thanks a million. Wish you well.
My pleasure, Jerry, as always. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much indeed. That's Mick Coop there, the Drogheda United manager, looking forward to the Europa League clash with Malmo from Sweden, home on the 4th of July and away in Sweden in Malmo a week later, the 11th. That's a lot on Late Lunch for this afternoon. Up next, Eddie Caffrey with The Drive, but until tomorrow at 1:30, we'll see you then.
The Late Lunch, weekdays from 1:30 on your station, LMFM.